the world is sick. So if the world is sick, then we have to look at the bigger picture. Now, what do I have to do to heal first myself? Because each of us doing some inner work will accelerate the healing of the world. That's my view.
I'm Felina Jean, and this is Black Broads Abroad. I'm an international woman of leisure who said peace out to the United States in 2011, and I have not looked back except at this ass, honey. Since then, I've lived on 4 continents with travel to over 40 countries. Along my journey, I've come to know some very compelling Black women from all over the world who also said fuck you to their comfort zones. I created this podcast to inspire Black women in the diaspora to take risks and live their very best lives.
Jennifer Tosh is a Surinamese-American scholar, historian, and founder of the Black Heritage Tours. Currently residing in Amsterdam, Jennifer is a Northern California native, having spent her formative years in Oakland and San Francisco, California, before going on to earn a degree at UC Berkeley. Jennifer first came to Amsterdam for an intensive 2-week post-colonial history course given by the Black Europe Summer School in the Netherlands and to explore the world in which her mother lived, as she had also lived and studied in the Netherlands for several years just after World War II. The inspiration behind Black Heritage Tours came not only from the transformative experience she had as a student at the Black European Summer School, but also from a void that she encountered regarding positive narratives about the presence and contributions of the African diaspora in the Netherlands. Jennifer knew that she could contribute her share to the process of unearthing the lives of our hidden histories in Europe, and in 2013, Black Heritage Tours in Amsterdam was born. The company has built a sustainable business by collaborating with an awesome team of scholars, historians, public officials, businesses, and heritage tourism professionals. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you. That was a lovely introduction. Thank you so much.
You have such an illustrious background and bio. You're so compelling. I'm going to give just like a bit of a backstory on how I came to be acquainted with you. So like some years ago, I was living in Qatar, and the Netherlands was like, it was one of my honeycomb hideouts because the tickets were just a few hundred dollars at the time. And I'd fly to places where I could like legally smoke weed because they had it in Qatar, but it was highly illegal and about the same cost of a plane ticket. So,
oh my gosh. Okay.
So I've been to Amsterdam and the Netherlands like several times, but my ex who used to live there told me about your tour because up until, I think it was 2017, I'd only come to the Netherlands to like visit friends and do shrooms and ayahuasca and smoke weed, frankly, okay? But I had the privilege of having a private tour of Amsterdam with you, and I read some of your guidebook beforehand, and you introduced me to the Netherlands and Amsterdam I was not entirely familiar with, and just the impact of African people every place is so prodigious, but it's also hidden. And I just want to personally thank you for unearthing our history and making it a focal point of your business and your mission. So thank you for doing interview today.
No, thank you, sis. I so much appreciate that it resonated with you. It's obviously something that, you didn't expect. And that's what I love about what I do is that a lot of people come and not knowing what to expect. So thank you for that. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you. So I mentioned in my bio that you are Surinamese American, but you were raised in the Bay Area in California, which is kind of known for radical Black thought and being the birthplace of so many important movements. How did being reared in such a rich cultural environment shape your worldview?
Well, that's a great question. One thing I will say is I was actually born in New York in the 60s. In the middle, my parents were immigrants from, at that time, they were living in Aruba. Both of my parents are from Suriname. All of my ancestors come from Suriname. And so when I was still a toddler, we moved to San Francisco, which is where I grew up. And I grew up in the time when, as you said, a lot of the radical Black thought, it was the home of the Black Panthers. I grew up in the Fillmore District. So I was surrounded always very keenly aware of Black power movements, but yet not really feeling connected to it because my heritage was not African-American. It didn't originate in the United States. So it influenced me on the periphery at first. Mm-hmm. And I was actually not allowed to enter the spaces as a child where all this radicalism was taking place and activism. Mm-hmm. So it was something that was always on the outside, me on the outside looking in. It wasn't until I went to UC Berkeley as an undergrad that I became more keenly aware of the value of the experiences that I had as a child. And where I really deeply connected with, or began the journey of connecting with my heritage, my Surinamese heritage. So it had a lot of influence that I wasn't even aware of until I became more astute as a student studying this history.
Wow. So fast forward a little bit. In 2013, you participated in a summer school program in the Netherlands that was focused on the Black experience in Europe. And what seems so serendipitous about it is that your mother also studied in the Netherlands after World War II. How did that experience define your scholarship and subsequently the founding of Black Heritage Tours?
Well, it's an interesting journey. The year before is when I actually started the summer school, and I went my last semester at Berkeley because I was a returning student. We call ourselves OWLs, older, wiser learners. Mm-hmm. So this was going back to school after a long absence when the financial crisis happened in 2008. And my last semester, I was allowed to go anywhere to study abroad. And I chose the Netherlands because my family roots are here. Mm-hmm. So I was really struck by the depth of the history and knowledge about the Black history in Europe, you know, the migrations, forced migrations, the historical narratives around the Black presence throughout Europe, and, you know, 17th century forward. Then I followed that experience going to a exchange program at a Dutch university. And it was the very divergent experience in that Dutch university, which somewhat erased or attempted to erase everything I had just learned about Black history in Europe. Mm. And it was that contradiction between the institutional university experience and this very immersive Black experience that prompted me to say, there's got to be more to this story that we in the Netherlands are not connecting to. So that's what really inspired me to do more research. And the tour was born. I didn't intend to start a business. It was a project. Mm. It was started off as literally my exploration to my own history, to Suriname history, to the Netherlands history, and trying to prove, because professors at the university I was attending were really denying that there was a Black history in the Netherlands, that slavery was something that was only in the colonies. This whole idea of a Black presence in the early part of the, you know, 17th century didn't exist. And that's where this sort of rub came. And when I started doing the research and really discovered there's so much of this visible history everywhere. You can see it on the buildings, the monuments, the canal houses, in the museums and archives. And I just started inviting, I said, let me take some friends, colleagues on this experience to show people what I had discovered. And people who were from here were so surprised. And then I kept getting asked to do it again. Can you show us? Can you take us? And finally, I said, let me yield to this calling. And that's when in 2013, I started the tour on my daughter's birthday.
Oh, wow. So when you
said I would never forget.
You were saying that your colleagues were begging you to take them on this tour. These are like your Dutch colleagues who were also not familiar with the...
My classmates, mm-hmm. It was colleagues that I had been working with in terms of doing this research. It was historians. There's an organization that was very influential called NINSE, which means the National Institute for the Study of Slavery and its Legacy. It's kind of, I call it the NAACP light version. I mean, just to get people a concept of what NINSE is about. And it was a research institute. And the first scholars that I really got introduced to were lecturers or researchers there. And that really spawned this, you know, let me go deeper, let me go further. And it was really exciting to be here at that time because in 2000, 2013, the national commemoration around the abolition of slavery was going on. It was 150 years since slavery in the Netherlands had been legally abolished. Mm-hmm. So there was already some, you know, attention on it. Museums were doing special exhibitions. There was a, you know, heightened sense of commemoration. So the tour that I created filled a void in the national narrative that wasn't being talked about. There was no formalized, you know, tour company that was focused on specifically Black history.
Okay.
So I really came, it was timing, the fortuitous about the timing was everything. And we started off small. People, you know, were skeptical. They weren't sure, here's this an American with Surinamese roots. What is she going to say? Is she going to demonize the Dutch history? You know, that's, I think, what initially drew people's interest is curiosity.
Mm-hmm. So Amsterdam is obviously a major tourist destination. And usually, you know, fortunately, the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, good weed, red light district. And this is not the typical fodder one thinks of when they're talking about Amsterdam. Can you walk us through some of the events and history and contributions of Black people that we may learn about on one of your tours?
Oh, great question. The Dutch were not the first to enter the slave trade. It was really the Portuguese, the Spanish, but the Dutch at one period in the 17th century, which has been known as the Golden Age, that's mm-hmm. referring to the rise of the Dutch Empire and capitalism. So the first thing that we do when we start the tour is try to create some context. I invite people to travel back in time to imagine what the space where we are, which is the city center, what it must have looked like. You know, that it was a commercial center. There was this trading town. It was really known as a place where people from all over the world came to engage in the first full-time stock exchange. And so there was a great sense of this nostalgia around that. So what we also try to invite people to do is to imagine the Black presence being here as a part of that. So going from this idea that there was no history of people of African descent to it was fully integrated into society. And also dispelling the myths around, was there slavery in the Netherlands? Was there not slavery? It wasn't considered legal, but it was socially accepted. So this idea of social tolerance, which is really very rooted in Dutch identity, because we, you know, tolerated the first to allow a legal use of marijuana, you know, same-sex marriage, euthanasia. So we had a great sense of pride around this sense of tolerance. But tolerance doesn't mean inclusion. It doesn't mean acceptance. So what we try to do is really invoke a new memory to invite people to experience the history of this great city and great country through a different lens, shifting our gaze, as we say, to really turn the lens around to see it through the eyes of someone of this, you know, that's connected directly to that history. So we travel throughout the canals, exploring buildings that still have these frozen images of what we call the Moors, so the Black Moors that are used as symbols of the products that were being produced and sold. So you have images of Africans holding, for example, tobacco leaves. You'll have other carvings we call gevel stenen, of the gabled stones that show this Black presence as symbols of power and wealth and status that are usually in the background behind this white subject who is highlighting their wealth and using this Black presence as like an ornament or a trophy. So throughout the city, we're exploring these different visual symbols of the colonial past and trying to reinterpret, why are they there? What are they telling us? What does it mean? Were these real people? Were they imagined people? And that's where I think the magic really happens, is traveling on the most popular canals in the city, looking at it in this different way, still enjoying the beauty of Amsterdam, but going, immersing ourselves in a different type of experience.
Mm. Well, so one of the things you've done is you've expanded Black Heritage Tours to New York, and I think you're coming soon. I'm not sure if you started in Brussels. Could you talk to us a bit about what you're doing with the Black Heritage Tours in those two new locations?
Yes. So after the launch of the tour in Amsterdam, the following year, I co-wrote a book about Black heritage tours, about Amsterdam slavery heritage. And then the couple of years later, so in 2016, I went back to school. So I've been a student at the University of Amsterdam to get my master's in heritage and memory studies. As a part of that research, my team that I'm a part of, this amazing collective called Mapping Slavery Nederland, and we're really exploring remapping the Dutch Empire, looking through this, again, this decolonial lens. And New York is where I was born. There's such a direct history connected to New York and the Dutch that a lot of people mostly don't know exists. I mean, they're unaware of how much the Dutch were influenced what is now New York, because it used to be called New Netherland. Lower Manhattan was New Amsterdam. You know, so what we try to do is also retrieve this forgotten history. And once we started doing the research, I was blown away myself at how many places throughout the state of New York still remember that history, but most people don't know about it. So I spent about 3 or 4 months doing research there as an intern, you know, do my internship and going to all these sites throughout the state, visiting them and trying to understand how they interpret this connected history to the Netherlands and to the African diaspora and indigenous people, doing workshops about, you know, speaking for the enslaved, which is an actual title of a book. How can we be more integrated into talking about these histories so that the public becomes more aware? And it just made sense to create a tour experience. And that's what we did in 2017, is started the Black Heritage Tours in New York. And that's a huge collaboration, again, with institutions like the New Netherlands Institute, Dutch culture in New York. The government was very supportive. New York State Parks and Recreation was very supportive in all these historical sites throughout the state. So we traveled on a private coach bus upstate all the way up to Albany, which was the first, is our capital, New York. But it was at that time, actually, the first place the first fort was built. And we travel along the Hudson River Valley, stopping at these historic sites, and end up in Manhattan. And it's very, again, illuminating. People are surprised, but they're immersing themselves in an experience that most people never even imagine is possible.
Wow. I need to go on that one too. It'll be interesting to see how.
You know, the difference between that one is that it's like a full day, or we can even do 3 days. I've done 4-day tours in New York because there's so many places to visit, burial grounds and historic sites, some national historic sites. And it just takes a lot more time because it's obviously we're talking about a much larger geography, but it is also an amazing experience and I really enjoy doing it.
What has been the biggest pro about leaving the United States and settling in Amsterdam, and what have been, if any, I'm sure there have been, but what, if any, challenges have you faced as a Black woman there?
Oh, that's a great question. The first pro, when I made the decision, which was really a difficult decision because I hadn't, like I said, I hadn't planned on staying. It was supposed to be 6 months, a year, and then go back. I had a whole nother life plan mapped out. So the first challenge was, I think, the transition from, you know, the American experience living in the U.S. all my life, and then moving to another country with a completely different worldview, different perspectives, similar but different histories, and finding my way. So the first year, my family lives here, by the way. I have 3 generations of my family have been living in the Netherlands. So okay. I wasn't coming completely isolated. My brother lives here. I lived with my brother for the first year until he kicked me out, although he would never say he did, but that's kind of what happened. Because when I was going to school, I was living with my brother and traveling from his house to school every day. And then moving from, he lived in Rotterdam, and moving to Amsterdam, because this is really where the heart of my work was. And so the transition of finding where to live, it's not easy to find housing. If you're from here, you know that. And being able to make an actual living from the tours took years. I mean, I struggled. Most people don't realize the struggle, that the financial struggle
Entrepreneurship. Oh, child. Oh, Lord, that's a whole other podcast.
Let me tell you.
It's not for the faint of heart.
That was the challenging part, was just financially getting grounded, you know, where I could support myself. And at that time, I was still considered an expat. I didn't have Dutch nationality. So that was the challenge of really finding my way, building my community. Even though my family was here, which were very supportive, it was creating a community of friends, of networks, of colleagues, and that took some time to do. The advantage was, I didn't realize, because the Netherlands and the United States have this friendship relationship that they've had for centuries. It's called the Friendship Agreement, and it actually allowed me to start the business fairly easy. Because of that relationship, it costs less to start a business here than it would start in New York, for example, in the U.S., which was great. And then after a few years, because of my family's heritage, I was able to also get Dutch citizenship. So I have dual nationality, which has transformed my life completely.
That's great.
That has helped a lot. And once that happened, it just allowed me to navigate a lot easier. The other challenge was language. I didn't speak Dutch fluently growing up. My mother, once my parents actually divorced when I was quite young, did not really keep the language alive in me because, well, I'm American, and she wanted me to be a la Americana. So right down to my name, she didn't speak Dutch to me. So when I came here, even though everyone speaks English, my Dutch language was horrible. So that was a challenge, because I really wanted to be accepted, you know, fully. And to me, that was the one piece that just kept me still a little bit on the outside in terms of my language. Now I'm gotten a lot better. I could hold a basic conversation, but still language was a challenge. And also leaving my family in California.
Yeah, I have a daughter.
my dad still lives in LA, and making the decision to leave my family that was in California was the hardest decision. She was already an adult, so to speak. She was out of high school and had already, you know, was starting her own life, and she gave me the blessing to go ahead and do it. But that was really, and still, that's something I still struggle with, because now I you know, can't see them as I often as I used to. So feeling that missing them and being so far away, is that's still the hardest part.
Yeah, now you have a granddaughter. So
granddaughter and a grandson just six months ago.
Oh, did she have another? Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. And they're just my life. They are so beautiful. And my daughter is doing very well, and she's, you know, has a really beautiful life. So that makes it easier for me to do what I do, because I know she's okay.
That's good. You mentioned the friendship treaty. I just wanted to touch a little bit more on that, because I was actually considering transitioning to the Netherlands. It pops up every few years, and so I did like quite a bit of due diligence. But for anybody in the listening audience, there is something called the Dutch American Friendship Treaty that makes transitioning to the Netherlands as an American, especially an American who is an entrepreneur, like much easier than transitioning in other countries. I think it's been around since like John Quincy Adams. It's a very old treaty.
Well, but John Adams, yes, the second president of the United States, John Adams, was the first ambassador. And we passed by his house on every tour on the boat where he lived in the 19th century. And so that relationship has been in place for obviously a very long time, and has really helped. Doesn't mean that your transition is perfect or easy. Mm-hmm. You still have to go through the challenges of, you know, integrating into a new society, but it definitely makes it easier than other places, I think, that you would try to do that.
For sure. I think a couple of the stipulations, I think they want just proof that you have spent like 4,500 euro, which is about $6,000, give or take, in your business. You don't actually have to pay them, but you need to show that you have spent like $6,000 in your business over the course of like 12 months. The process is actually not that arduous, but for anybody that wants to look up the Dutch American Friendship Treaty, it's a great way for entrepreneurs to transition there.
The other way to do it, which is the way I actually did it, was as a student. So first I start off as an international student, and you get a visa as a student. And then you, it took about a year and a half to 2 years for me to really to get my Dutch citizenship. But let's say I didn't do that. As a student, you have, obviously you get some of the benefits of being a student, an exchange student. And then the transition from that to being an expat. And I, every 3 months, as long as you leave the country every 3 months and come back, leaving out of the European Union, let's say go to London and then come back, the 3 months restarts up. So you can buy time. This is a kind of a little trick, how to buy time while you're trying to build your network and your business. And the thing that's the rule is you have to have in an account at least, I think it's 4,500 or 5,000, because what the government wants to make sure that you're not then becoming dependent on social welfare to survive. Mm-hmm. So my friend Eric, who runs the Orange Umbrella Tours, Aranya Umbrella Tours, who is an expat, we have a similar journey. He had, you know, this is a challenge because you have to keep that amount of money in your account. And I don't know if right now, because of the, you know, the coronavirus pandemic, if you can access those funds, but they want to make sure that you're just not becoming a burden on the social system.
That makes sense.
That's the reason for that. And, but getting a Chamber of Commerce ID was fairly easy. Starting up the business was fairly easy. Getting a bank account, fairly easy. As long as you have your passport, your visa, or your, you know, permissions, it's not that difficult. It's not.
So what has been the biggest lesson that you've learned about stepping outside of your comfort zone?
Ooh, you're asking great questions. The biggest lesson, I think that what made it a lot easier for me, and I did have an initial seed investor, but I didn't have enough capital. I think if I would have done it all differently, I would have sourced startup capital. I did it the old fashioned, you know, grassroots, one tour at a time, giving away a lot more than I took in, but having more startup capital would have made that a lot easier. The other lesson I learned is to ask for help. I'm so proud. I'm still very proud. It was very difficult to be in a position where I needed help. And I think the lesson, if I could do it over again, hindsight is always 20/20 vision, but doing it over again, I would have asked for help sooner. You don't have to struggle alone. There are communities of people that are here that want to be a part of something like this. I mean, this is an exciting initiative, and I now have a beautiful team I worked with. But I think if I had taken the onus to ask for help sooner, especially with the language challenges that I encountered, I would have saved a lot of time and pain. That was a hard lesson. Other hard lesson is self-care. We as entrepreneurs, and I'm sure you can attest to this, we have a really difficult time taking care of ourselves. We become workaholics because this is our baby. We give birth to it. We nurture it. We put everything into it. Yeah. But I forgot, let me put it personal. I forgot how important it is to rejuvenate. So that's why I really appreciate this time, even though it's costing a lot financially, emotionally, physically, spiritually. This is like a gift. Take time for self-care. That's so important.
That's good. That's very good advice. And so my last question, because Black Broads Abroad, the podcast, it is to inspire Black women to step outside of their comfort zones and to offer advice and a sounding board for those who are thinking about making the transition. What advice do you have for Black women that are considering moving abroad?
That's, again, a great question. I'd say the first thing to do is really the self-work. Don't do it because you're trying to run from something else to what you perceive as something better. Whew. Every society, you know, my dear, every society, every country, everywhere, anywhere you go has social problems. And that was the other lesson, is there's no utopia. So don't just go from where you are to here thinking, oh, life is better in Amsterdam or the Netherlands because they allow, you know, marijuana and blah, blah. That's not the reason. You have to still take yourself with you wherever you go. Oof. If you haven't done the self-work, you will be crushed by this experience. That's the hard truth.
That's all, period. So,
that's it, okay? First things first, do the self-work. And that's what we talked about before we went live, is we are in a global pandemic, but what the symbolism for me is, the world is sick. The world is sick. We have not taken attention to this inner world that is now being called to recalibrate, as you put it. So that to me is the first step. Then once you've done the self-work and questioning, what are your intentions? Why do you want to come here? Is it just a social reason? Is it to expand your life, to add to the society in some meaningful way, to create something, or just to come and take up space? So the intention is important, to really question what's your intention and have goals. Set some goals as to milestones. While I'm here, this is what I want to achieve or want to experience, and find your community right away before you get here. Reach out to people who've done it. Connect with people. There's lots of these, like Black Women Amsterdam group I'm a part of, Black Women Meetup. And this is a diaspora of women, or men and women, that have created these communities of support. So find your support, and then make sure that financially you can do it, because leaving a country where you're from or you live to come to a place that has a different currency, different rules, and you're not financially ready is devastating. It's devastating. I can't tell you how many times I said, I'm leaving. I'm going back. I can't do it. It's not right. It's not working. And that would be really important. And then the last thing I would say is, trust yourself, have a spiritual practice, because you're going to need it. And I mean, it doesn't matter if your spiritual practice is as Christianity or, you know, Muslim or whatever it is, have a spiritual practice, because guess what? Your faith is going to be tested. You're going to be tested. If you don't have a spiritual foundation, I don't know what people do that don't believe in God or higher power. I want to know, I want to talk to them. How do you survive this?
I know, right?
Okay, losing all your income. How do you survive if you don't have a place that's beyond the world that you can go to call spiritually for healing, for support? That's very important. And I think family is also essential. Don't try to do this without your family. If you're leaving someplace to run away from something, is not the answer. You need your family support, because on those rough days when I want to talk about going in the fetal position, honey, thumb in my mouth, I have to call on my family to talk me off the ledge, if you will.
Yeah.
So that's my advice. And love yourself. Really, really come with the understanding that you are enough. You're good enough, you're smart enough, you're brave enough. If you're even thinking about doing it, it takes a level of courage. So, you know, take that into consideration, all of the who you are, and you're bringing to add something to where you're going. Not to take something out of where you're going, but to add something to where you're going. And I think you'll find that in the social media world we're in now, sis, there's a lot of support. There's a lot of, and you know, creating something like what I've done, I had no idea it was going to become what it has become. I really didn't. I had a vision of it, I had an idea of it, but it has taken a life of its own. And now that my whole, you know, world has been sort of turned upside down, I'm having to innovate, create new ways of doing what I do. Virtual tours, for example.
Yeah.
online, you know, to transfer this knowledge from the space where I was used to doing it publicly to now you can do it from your home. So don't think that you're not going to struggle, because that's part of our life experience, but we are survivors as women, as Black women. So use the spirit of our ancestors to pull you through your journey. And that's what's worked for me.
That's some real solid advice. You dropped the mic before we started the interview and the last question.
No, and I'm so glad you asked that, because this is, we're on a journey. This is not, this incident of the virus is only a window into what was wrong. And again, the self-healing has to happen before the world healing will happen. So if we take this opportunity to, like, I'm doing an online course in Yale.
What?
There are free courses online. So for me, myself, inventing myself, let me go back. Let me see what kind of course I can take without having to pay for it. I'm taking an online course at Yale for free that's called The Science of Well-Being. Oh my goodness. Let me just tell you. There are so many things we can do. I'm now trying to finish my master's writing, which has been something I've been unable to do because I've been so busy. So finishing my coursework at the University of Amsterdam is a goal. Setting new goals. How do I want to be when all this is over? Who am I? Who do I want to become? And doing the work. And it's not easy. You caught me on a good day. Okay. You're talking 2 days ago. You've been like, you depressed? What's wrong with you? Because it's every day is different.
It sure is.
I don't know what every day is different. So I'm just doing what I can each day, taking it as it comes and doing the best I can. And the days I don't have it, I just say I don't have it. And I'm giving myself permission. So,
amen. Where can people keep up with your journey and see what you have coming down the pipeline on social media?
I'm on everything. So I'm Black Heritage Tours on Facebook. You can find me Black Heritage Tours on Instagram, on Twitter, Black Heritage AM. I'm on LinkedIn, Black Heritage Tours. I'm on everything, TikTok. I mean, I'm Black Heritage Tours everywhere.
Do you have a TikTok, girl?
I got a TikTok. So you can go Black Heritage Tours. If you just Google Black Heritage Tours, all of our social media will, or my website, blackheritagetours.com. You can buy our books there. Stay tuned, because the live 360-degree virtual tour is coming in the next couple of weeks. Where you can download content. If you're not able to travel, you'll still be able to experience it. So there's a lot of exciting things happening. And I'm also part of this Sites of Memory, which is a new foundation that I started with my colleague and friend, Katie Streit. We're doing theatrical boat tours, theatrical city tours. Hmm. We'll be coming to South Africa, doing it in Cape Town when we're able to travel again. So just join us on social media, and we blog. I talk a lot about what's going on. And I look forward to staying connected. Reach out if you want, more personal advice about making a transition here. We have a great community, a great network of people that are doing amazing work. And I'm just thrilled to be a part of that. So come on, let's do this.
Thank you so much, Jennifer.
You're welcome, and thanks for including me in your journey. I really appreciate being invited to participate, and I wish everyone safety, health, well-being, and peace of mind. Let's calibrate at a higher level. Let's heal ourselves, heal the world, heal each other. We're going to get through this. This is just a call for us to raise the level of our consciousness. So let's do the work.
Amen.
This episode is brought to you by Living Millennial Podcast. Tune in each week on Apple Podcasts to listen to Black millennials discussing their experiences and different perspectives on trending topics.
Shout out to our Patreon members. Thank you so much for your support. If you too are interested in supporting the Black Broads Abroad movement, keep up with us on social media, and that's at Black Broads Abroad, BlackBroadsAbroad, and that's on IG and Facebook. And if you're interested in supporting on Patreon, visit www.patreon.com/BlackBroadsAbroad.